I really love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
To get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
Alex.
Can he afford to pay me to wrestle around? I don't know. I'm one of the biggest legend stars ever in this. God! And your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy!
And Dave!
Next time I see you, I'm throwing a bag of pennies right in your fucking face, John!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to Comic Conversations, episode 136, where we talk all things comics for the week of March 16th, 2016. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Alex and Dave. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I'm alright.
And Alex?
I'm doing good.
Alright. That's great. Alright, let's move on to our first segment. As always, news. Ooh, that was loud. Oh boy, turn that bad boy down. Alright, let's start with our first news story. We've had with all this build up for Civil War 2 coming, we've had the reveal of the two teams. Now we're not going to go into specifics, we don't want to get into spoilers, but if you've already seen it, you know what the teams are.
You could probably get the name of the leaders of the teams.
That for a while. It's Captain Marvel and Iron Man.
That's cute because you could still say it's still Cap versus Iron Man.
Yeah, the gimmick is we actually talked about this before. They either find someone or some way to see the future, and Iron Man doesn't want to use this person or thing to change the future, and Captain Marvel does, and the superheroes split over, you know, which is which, like which is right to do. And they built it up so that you could have interesting fights, like, you know, the two Caps are on different sides and some of the characters' friends are on different sides. And then they announced that they're bringing back like jobber characters we haven't seen in a while to be involved in this, like try to use it to get them over, like the Power Pack and who's the other one? The fucking people who clean up after superhero fights.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I forget their name.
Damage something. Damage Control. Yeah, they're bringing them back. They've popped up every once in a while. So
yeah, we announced a couple of weeks back that they were gonna get their own individual title, or they're getting their own television show.
It's a TV show because it makes sense for a TV show because you're dealing with people who live in the world where superheroes are fighting and destroying your city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who is responsible for that? Aside from the superheroes.
Okay. So and speaking of all things Civil War, Alex, you brought up another news story to my attention. Something having to do with a Civil War anthology book?
Oh yeah. Declan Shelby, who does, Injection right now, but did, Moon Knight with Morrison before, and we put over his art a lot. He's writing and drawing something for an anthology series Marvel is doing, and Marvel is pushing it as if he has more control in this. Like, they're almost positioning him as the editor.
Ooh, nice.
Because you're going to have other stories in it that all take place during Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he'll be doing the writing and the art in that, so that's different for him. I hope he's a good writer, because I think he's a fantastic artist. Marvel appears to be trying to lock him down. Like, you know, oh, you could do your Image stuff, but don't work for DC, please. Like, just keep drawing our shit.
Do you want UFC spoilers? I don't know if you're going to watch the show.
I don't care about this show.
Oh,
this is the news aspect of the show, so it'd be fitting since we are on the MMA website.
Mark Hunt knocked out Frank Mir.
Good.
One more for the Super Samoan.
So now he can go fight Belfort?
Samoa Joe. He can fight Samoa.
Who's the champ?
The heavyweight champ.
Sucks.
The heavyweight champ is Junior Dos.
What's his name?
Verdum. I forgot my mistake.
Verdum.
Is it Brock Lesnar?
Brock Lesnar.
When's Weidman getting his belt back?
I believe in the spring.
Oh, you know, he fought that match with a broken foot or something?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Freaking Dave popped that in a freaking...
Wasn't he sick too?
I don't know. I just know the leg. I don't know about being sick, but it was just that people were like, wait a minute, how come this was never reported? So Dave knew it. He just sat on it.
Well, because they couldn't talk about it before the show because you think it affects buys.
Hey.
He's in the tank for UFC.
Healthy enough to win, healthy enough to lose. Am I right?
My God.
Nate Diaz beat Conor McGregor on 2 weeks training. What's up?
They're showing the Impact Zone pick in that Mecha Fred. Mm-hmm. You know, granted, these are shows that are like free shows at Universal Studios, and there's barely anyone there.
By the way, since we're talking about stuff that has nothing to do with comics, fucking Dave didn't get the news that Bobby Roode and Eric Young are leaving TNA. Fucking slacker. Gets scooped by PW Insider.
Ouch.
Where are his sources?
Apparently, well, the thing is the Impact site actually broke the news, not PW Insider.
Well, it still doesn't appear on WrestlingObserver.com, so.
Speaking of TNA, sort of trying to steer this back into our regular show, if you haven't already, check out the Christopher Daniels interview. That's a great show. I know since Alex has heard it and thought it's amazing, really put it over. So if you haven't already, and I have to imagine that most people listening to this probably already have, but for whatever reason why, if you don't care about the... If you haven't, I guess if you somehow managed to not listen to that, maybe go out of your way and listen to it.
I listened to it and determined he has to be the nicest man in wrestling.
which says a lot considering, you know.
He just seemed like such a good guy. And when you asked him about WWE or NXT, he gave like the best response ever where he didn't bury anyone. Where he just basically said, I'm kind of old to, you know, start over. But then he also answered the, well, couldn't you be a trainer?
That's what I was thinking too. Like, I was going to ask that question and then he sort of answered.
He said, I'm not ready to get out of the ring yet. But, so he answered every question and about that.
And then he also said, you know, he's not really in a position to teach someone what they want. So he's sort of.
Yeah, because he's never worked for him.
And for those of you who are listening to this, it'd be like, well, I'm not a wrestling guy. I don't really care. Keep in mind, this is the same guy who was very tight with the Marvel upper echelon people. But more importantly, he's a huge comic book fan.
It was like 75-80% comics.
Yeah, like I said, even if you listen to this show and you know you sort of roll your eyes when we talk about the pro wrestling stuff, keep in mind this interview was done by a guy who is very close with the people of Marvel, reads everything from Marvel, reads some stuff outside of Marvel, but for the most part, he's predominantly focused on Marvel. So, like I said, even if you're not really a pro wrestling person per se, you can still I would recommend checking out that interview because this is a guy who clearly knows his stuff, and he has a taste of what he likes. And for the most part, I think he put over stuff like the Vision series and Old Man Logan. So he's got a very good taste.
Also, keep in mind if you're listening to this show, we're approaching like what 150 episodes, and
this is episode 136. Yes.
Yeah, and we've always been wrestling fans, and we've always talked about wrestling, and we've always talked about UFC, and we're hosted on a fucking website called halfguarded.com. So. You know,
it's fitting that we happen to every now and then we'll break down and talk about pro wrestling or MMA, considering that our site covers both.
I know we're going to start covering, we should start covering wrestling that no one else covers. Like I'll go to local indie shows that like 30 people go to.
We'll have more listeners than people that went to the show.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be funny. All right. And go back to normal comic book stuff. Now, I think we've talked about it individually, but we've never actually talked about it on the show. And now that they did that Chicago comic book convention, we can actually talk about it. There's a Jeff Lemire Moon Knight series in the works.
That's been known for a long time, actually.
Yeah, but we've never discussed it on the show. And
Jeff
Lemire?
Yes.
Oh, they did? We never talked about it, though.
Yeah, we never talked about it on the show. So
we mentioned it, but this was, remember back in a while back when they were all those new solicitations, we did mention it.
That's what I thought too, but I talked to Alex and he said maybe we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, nope. I thought we didn't talk about it. That's my bad.
But remember, the book didn't come out right away. That's probably why we forgot about it.
I apologize, close listeners.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. And our last bit of news stories, we had a follow-up on that Deathmate thing. Now, we knew initially that Deathmate was the crossover between Valiant and Image. We had an update. It's not going to be a crossover between the two series. In fact, it's just going to be a mini.
Which we discussed how this doesn't make any sense. Like, how could they do a follow-up to an Image crossover? But Valiant, a lot of times, we mentioned this last week, they will repurpose their old stuff to their new universe, and that's just what they're doing here. Deathmate's a new character. And that's it.
Yeah. not a, you know, earth-shaking news story, but it's just something that we talked about last week, and we're wondering how they're going to do this considering there's no, you know, shared continuity at Image anymore, and how they're going to do a crossover, and what title would they do it over since there's no shared continuity. So it's not going to be a crossover between the two companies.
Hopefully it's a good character, though.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've yet to be really disappointed by Valiant, so that's probably going to be really good. All right, let's move on to our next segment, the lightning round. Okay, as usual, we have a quite healthy lightning round. This week's lightning round includes Huck, Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, Squadron Supreme, and all new Inhumans. Do you guys have any preference before we start this?
I don't care.
Okay, let's talk Huck. Now, like I always have to feel like I gotta do the Stan Lee gimmick. You never know if this is gonna be someone's first time listening to lightning.
Shut up! We people already know. It's so annoying every week.
He could have been done in the time it took you to do that.
Yes. Huck number 5, come on.
Okay, you're the one who took notes, so.
Alright, Huck, he finds out that the brother that he thought was his brother is not actually his brother, it's an android. The Russian-built androids, they were looking for him the whole time and his mother. Him and his mother captured. They intend to breed Huck with women so they can create an army of superhumans.
Mm-hmm.
And they're imprisoned in this thing that apparently that's able to keep him even though he's so strong. But apparently his mother has powers where she can get people to do stuff, so she makes him want to get out of the cell.
Well, she told him to, like, he's hitting this glass, and it's like some sort of special unbreakable glass, but he can't get through it, and then she can make people do whatever she wants, so she just told him, break the glass. And since she had compelled him to do it, he had to continue trying to do it until he finally did it, and he did.
Yep.
Yeah, there was a cute little scene where people all around Russia noticed there was some loud, thundering clapping going on.
He was hitting pretty hard. The weird thing is they're like, oh, well, you know, you can't sense anything in there because her power is mind control, but your power is tracking. And it's like, I think his power is a little more than fucking tracking since he has super strength.
Yeah.
And he can, like, jump on top of buildings and shit, but whatever.
Okay, next book, Wrath of the Eternal Warrior.
It's a flashback issue. Shows him in ancient Mesopotamia. He has a wife at the time who wants kids. He doesn't want to, but apparently he, you know, eventually he gives in and he's like, yeah, he has a kid. His camp where he was living at apparently is overrun by, I'm not exactly sure what they are, but, they kill his entire village and, kidnap his son. So now he's tracking them to their walled, I don't know if it's like a fort or castle or whatever it is.
Well, and this is the son, the older son. Yes. Who doesn't particularly like him. So we can assume he doesn't actually get him back at this point since the son was upset with him because he had
came to
play. Yeah, he never came to rescue him. And he tried to tell him, no, I did try to rescue you, I couldn't find you. So this is that son. Which that makes sense because if you're gonna do a flashback, he's, like the other ones, they're really young and they're just his normal kids with his wife and they got killed, but it was a loving family. This is the only family member he had issues, well, aside from Armstrong, this is the only family member he has issues with.
Mm-hmm.
So, that all made sense.
So, and it great book, but there wasn't a whole lot going on, that's the way he did lightning round. Next book, Squadron Supreme.
This sort of finished up the Weird World story.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel's not going to be reading this book anymore because of they just did a couple of things in this. They beat Dr. Druid because Dr. Druid's big deal was he had this giant crystal. Well, Dr. Spectrum, a lot of doctors in this book.
Yeah, no kidding.
Her gem that gives her powers is magic in nature. So when they killed her, when they like exploded her, what happened was the gem was like overloaded with power. So it just took some time to process that. And then it was able to like reconstitute her body. But now she's like super duper powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Hyperion found out in something that apparently only I found funny. he was asking, like, well, why don't I have my powers? And what's her name? Thundara?
Yeah.
She goes, well, have you ever been involved with magic stuff before? And he goes, well, no. He's like, well, so you have a weakness to magic. And he just goes, oh, okay. And that was it. Like, they explained it and it moved on. But
get it? Cause Superman?
Yeah, but Spectrum, yeah, cause he's Superman. But, Dr. Spectrum put a little bubble around him that would, cancel out the effect. So he had a lot of his strength back. They go, they destroy the big gem. Dr. Druid is, you know, dead again, but he is apparently, latched on to, I think it was Blur, one of the squadron members, and is like riding him.
I thought it was Tyndall, the kid who was with Thundra.
Oh, I thought it was Blur. Cause did he go? Because what they did was, the girl from there, since they lost Power Princess, since she was a traitor, and she did get away, by the way, she ran off. They had to get a new girl on the team. So, the girl who came to get them is now a part of the team. She said she was going with them because if they were doing good, then she can help them do good. But if they were going to do bad, she could stop them from doing bad.
Yeah, she took that kid with them.
She did? Okay. Well, I thought it was Blur, who gets along very well with Nighthawk. They're buddies. Not because they're black, but because, he said, you know, Blur comes from a world that is pretty much like our world,
mm-hmm.
is how they laid it out. Like, nobody has superpowers. And Nighthawk is the most grounded of all the Squadron Supreme characters. Since he's Batman, he exists in a more sort of world.
So much for lightning review.
Well, I had stuff to say about this. We fought about whether or not this is going to be lightning round because I actually had stuff to say. So I got to go with what I got to say, Marvel. Sorry.
Okay. Dave. All new Inhumans.
I didn't even remember what happened in this, but I don't particularly think I disliked it.
All the more reason for it to be in lightning round.
Yeah.
Sky Spears, they investigate the Sky Spears. Spider-Man makes a guest appearance. Chinese Avengers make an appearance. One of them appears to be sort of inhuman because apparently the Sky Spears give Inhumans enhanced powers. And Gorgon is training a new Inhuman who apparently has found out that they have a stockpile of weapons.
A giant fuck. Like, they had tanks and robots and walls of guns. They had all kinds of shit. I don't know. The interesting part of this book is the Inhumans dealing with, like, foreign governments and how they all view this increased population of Inhumans. That's the interesting part of the book. This has taken us very far away from that because the Chinese superheroes even pointed out, like, they're like, oh, the government said we could be here. And they're like, well, we're not here on behalf of the government. So they've completely removed that from the story and sort of taken its gimmick away.
Oh boy.
Which I don't particularly like, but I mean, how long is the storyline going to go anyway?
Who knows? Maybe yeah, we'll time to drop this book. All right, that's going to do it for this week's Lightning Round. Let's move into this week's books. That is Paperboy, the main theme from the arcade. Thank you, Dave. Let's go over this week's books, which include Astro City 33, Clean Room 6, Lucifer 4, Injection 8, Monstrous 4, Rat Queens 18, Star 7, Symmetry 4, All New X-Men 6, All New The Extraordinary Ant-Man 6, Captain Marvel 3, Extraordinary X-Men 8, International Iron Man 1, Spider-Woman 4, Scarlet Witch 4, Starbrand and Nightmask 4, Uncanny Inhuman 6, World Warriors, I don't have the number in front of me, I'll pull it up later. Archer and Armstrong 1, Imperium 14, and we already did Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, sorry. This list is a little outdated, but that's gonna do it for the list of this week's books. Alright, let's go into our first review. Astro City.
We continued the Steeljack story in this. There was a brief and awkward conversation about Steeljack having sex. I'm not sure why he chose to include that, but he did helpfully inform us that, due to his great weight, because, you know, he's made of steel.
Yeah, he weighs like, what,
850 pounds. He said it used to be more, but he's old now, so he's lost weight. He can only be with very hardy women. they go to see, his buddy, who was like the fixer. He wasn't called the fixer.
Yeah.
He collects
all sorts of tech. He has a fetish.
But he used to fix it for the villains.
Yeah.
So that's his gimmick. But he, you know, Steeljack goes to see him to basically get information out of him. Like, who did you sell this stuff to? Because it's not just her, because, you know, Cutlass, who came to see him, somebody used her energy blades or whatever to commit a crime to, like, frame her, but also a couple of the other older villains who had gotten out of the game were suddenly back, and some of them had died, some of them had got arrested, but it didn't make any sense that they were back, so he thought maybe somebody is using the tech to do these things. So he went to this guy because he's the guy he knew, found out he was selling this stuff to a a chain of supervillain themed restaurants so they could put it on the wall.
That was great.
But they had stopped buying from him because they just got knockoffs made in Hong Kong. But Steeljack decides, hey, I'm a supervillain, I'll go there. So he goes with Cutlass and is sitting in the restaurant eating. And of course the guy who owns it, notices them and has them come back to his office. And he's like, oh, I'm your biggest fan, but it's done in like a threatening way.
He said, oh, I wouldn't threaten you, but, I'm your biggest fan.
Yeah, he has two villains as security.
Well, those are like robots, and they didn't even say if the suits work or not. Presumably they do, because this guy appears to be the villain. Although, this is a mystery story, so it might be, you know, oh, we're hinting that he's the villain. We don't know.
Quick question. Was the photo that was posted in the restaurant, was that the father from the Cracker Jack storyline? The daughter?
No, it was her dad. Or, yeah, it was the father.
Okay, that's what I was wondering reading this.
She's Cracker Jack too.
Ah, there you go. Okay, that was Astro City, writer Kurt Music, art by Brent Eric Anderson. Next book. Clean Room number 6, writer Gail Simone, art by John Davis Hunt.
A whole hell of a lot happened in this issue.
This is a violent comic.
No kidding, that's an understatement with the guy with the knives sticking out of his head.
Yeah, she had a bathtub full of knives and just went at him. They also did not answer what the fuck are these things.
No, they kind of left it open to the imagination, because they mentioned a crash site and she fought off one of these things, and he's like, what are we, demons, aliens, or, and he's like, we're simply, and he gave some...
Inmates.
Yeah, that's the description he gave, but he pretty much gave every theory, and then didn't confirm anything.
And, the one weirdo who, likes,
people having sex, he built a big gun for him.
Yeah, apparently he's supposed to destroy their home world, wherever the hell it is.
Well, they called it like the Cloud City or something, but it's invisible.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Somewhere?
Yeah, cause he said it's above, it was above Barcelona right now. So, apparently they all live in a big invisible sky city.
And also we found out why Chloe's boyfriend committed suicide. Apparently because the higher you get in Mueller's organization, you get
so Scientology.
Yeah, I know.
Once you get to level 5, you get to learn the truth about everything, and then some people cannot handle the truth, so they end up committing suicide.
That's right. He went OT5 and he learned about Zeno.
You said no surprisingly a lot about Scientology. I'm getting a little word here.
Oh god, dude, I've read like every book, I've watched every movie, Scientology is fascinating. It's not anymore because we know everything, but no, that's basically what it was. He got to OT5 and he fucking found out about Xenu and he killed himself. Now the interesting thing to note in this is, when she explains everything to him, that's when he went and got the gun and killed himself. So we hear her entire speech about what he's going to learn, but they do not tell us what he learned.
Let's move on to our next book, Lucifer number 4. Now, last week you said this is going to be a contender for Book of the Week, and you were certainly right. Writer?
Yes.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Writer Holly Black.
Art by Lee Garbett.
Who are both amazing, yeah. And I hope they write this book forever. And it just keeps going and going and going. I fucking love this book. But it's kind of a cheat because it, you know, I'm a big Sandman fan. I was a big fan of the original Lucifer. And they keep mixing in settings and characters from those books.
They're cheating.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, you remember this? You can mark out for this. And it's like, oh, come on, that's so fucking shitsy you're doing that. But the thing is, I can't complain about it that much because they also have developed new characters who are actually doing something. And all these characters they're introducing, they have a reason to be in the story. You can argue Cain and Abel don't really have a reason to be in this story particularly. That really could have been anyone. But other than that, you know, it all made sense. So, I really like this book.
They headed into the Japanese underworld in this issue.
Which is connected to the dreaming. They established that back in the day.
Yeah, he confronts nightmare versions of himself. Which is fascinating, particularly because he reflects on how silly he is. You know, it's like the...
Yeah, it's the big red devil with the horns and...
I never read the original, but he had a thing with the Japanese, ruler of the underworld.
Yeah, they showed it all. I mean, they gave you the basics, Izanami, and, he kind of tricked her into some shit. When Lucifer decided to leave Hell, which set up his own series, that was in Sandman. But he had Morpheus cut off his wings. I don't remember exactly. I think it was because he was going to Earth and he couldn't be walking around with big fucking wings on his back. It'd be too conspicuous. So during the course of his series, he had to go get his wings back. Somehow the Japanese deities ended up with his wings. So he ended up having two of the lead god's kids killed. And she was mad at him, but you know, he said he left on good terms. He didn't exactly leave on good terms. It wasn't like this where she's like, you know, we'll fucking bathe in his blood or whatever she said. But, you know, it wasn't like, I'm gonna get this fucker. They didn't leave like that. So that was different.
Apparently, they were able to grow a new pair of wings from one of his feathers.
Yeah, which, it was the sun, and he gets all pissed at him because he's like, well, if fucking had a seed from a plant and you planted the seed, you wouldn't get mad at him for that. I thought that was a good point.
Well, anyways, he took the wings and he gave it to, he sewed it onto, Gabriel. It's like, well, look, I don't feel like carrying you around anymore, so.
And he again pointed out the reason he's not at his, like, people don't know he's not at full strength, but the reason why is because of that fucking black thing inside him, which he said hurts like a bitch, and it's not doing good. And then we had the black girl who's living with the crazy family.
The meat of this book, horrible, if you ask me.
Yeah, who are still horrible to her, but she has, what's the demon's name?
It's Beelzebub.
Beelzebub?
No, it's Azazel.
Azazel.
There we go.
Okay.
Thank you.
So she has Azazel, and he keeps, you know, hey, let me out. You can fucking kill these guys. And she's like, no, the only reason I took you, he's like, well, because she goes, no, I don't want power. I don't want to kill anyone. And he's like, well, why'd you take me then? She goes, well, because the next person who comes along, they might fall for your shit. And
she's a smart one.
Happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she is. She's a very smart little girl, which the Lucifer series has a history of. But she decides to go run away to her brother because after this family's two kids died, she realized it's never going to be all right. The dad thinks she brought a demon into the house and the demon possessed the woman who killed his two other kids. And, you know, The irony being, she did bring a demon into the house, but it was after all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's running away to go up there, but Lucifer and Gabriel show up because Lucifer needs to talk to the demon for some reason. He pointed out that, there's a demon. You got a demon there. You don't really want him. I'll take him. But the demon's telling her, like, no, that's the devil. Like, that's loose. That's the real devil. Like, you don't want to let him have me. That's not a good idea. You can't trust anything he says. So she takes this to heart and she releases the demon. And the last page is the big, eyeball black mass that he is kind of behind her. And we know Lucifer is currently weakened because of his injury. So this demon who previously wouldn't have been much of a threat to him might be kind of a threat to him now.
Interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, they can, the cool thing about this story is because of how it is and what it's dealing with, they can literally go anywhere they want with this.
Yeah, the stuff with Azazel in the jar, I think is far and away the meat of this book, and I love it. And like I said, the stuff with Lucifer is fine and all. It is what it is. I like Marvel. I kind of feel like, or Dave, I feel like I'm kind of missing out. But all the stuff with Azazel and the little girl, that's very fresh and that's a cool idea.
Well, but it's still all connected. Everything else that's going on, we just don't know how yet. We'll find out in the next issue.
Okay.
So that's good how they can take these separate plot elements that seem like they don't quite tie up, and now they're tying them all up. That's cool.
Okay, that's going to do it for our vertical section of the show. Next up, Image, Injection number 8, writer Warren Ellis, art by Declan Slavy.
Shelby.
Thank you.
I talked about him in the...
That's in the right. Okay. My mistake. It looks... It's spelled differently than it sounds.
Yeah.
It's, this issue follows Vivek's continuing investigations of his ghost sex case.
Now he's the greatest bisexual character in comics. This character continues to deliver.
Can we have an award at the end of the year for best characters?
The Vivian Headland Award?
Yes.
Although apparently from this issue, practically everyone in this group is bisexual.
Yeah, they are. That was actually really funny because they just had a thing where before we knew he'd eaten human because he had to try everything. And in this issue, we find out he's had weird sex with women and dudes and women and dudes at the same time because, you gotta experience everything. But there's a really funny scene where he's just laying down with the black dude who's in their group and they clearly just got done fucking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sim.
But he's very matter of fact about all this. And then they give a call to one of the girls on the team and she's sleeping with one of the other chicks. Yeah, the only one who's not into both sides appears to be the English guy who's a wizard.
Yep.
But he probably is too. It's alright. For some reason in this book, usually when they do this, I think, oh god, they're sandwiching in gay characters just to have a gay character. And it really bugs me. In this, I thought, no, I buy this with all these characters. I'm totally okay with this.
It's not being written by Karen Gillian.
Well, there's that too. There's no agenda. There's no agenda to the character's sexuality. In fact, Headland is explained through the whole thing. It's not really about sex. That's not what it was. So that was all right. That was fun though. And the wizard guy, he found out that the redhead, she
like Maria, I think is her name.
Maria, yeah. She pretty much blames him for the whole injection problem.
Yeah.
Because they did the AI programming, basically, but he's the one who put the magic in it.
Yeah, so she's like, well, it's kind of my fault, but it really is your fault.
Yeah, and she said, what he said was, she blames me for doing this, she blames herself, but she just blames herself for not stopping me from doing this. But the thing is, the thing talks to him. Like, he can hear it talk, and it's... That's done in an interesting way because his talking, it's done in like yellow, like narration almost letters, but they only appear in the panels, the wizard's in. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting how they do that. But, Vivian's moving his detectiving forward in this in hilarious fashion. Didn't his manservant. He didn't get him. He stopped him from getting laid, which he's very upset about.
Well, they were being targeted at the end.
Yeah, he might get shot.
Did you see that one part? The funniest part was his interaction with one of the, I don't think she's a member of her group, but she's like, I guess one of the people who work with the group.
Yeah, and she was like, would she say, I hate you? Or
he explained everything. He's like, oh, try me. Cause you know, he's like, oh, you wouldn't understand it or you wouldn't believe it. He's like, try me. And then he went through the whole thing and then she kind of gave this look. And then in the next panel, she was like, I hate you.
Yeah. They did the great comic joke of two identical panels, but the second one has text, which is always high comedy, almost, except in that shitty, Ultimate End fucking book where Bendis just repeated the talking heads twice. That wasn't funny.
Bendis finds a way to ruin a lot of things that normally work.
I know. I still like that for the fact that Luke Cage walks around everywhere crying all the time, according to that art. No, this is another good issue. This series is a lot of fun. I get the sense Ellis has a lot of fun writing it, mainly just because of this character.
I know.
Which he's, you know, I liked this before he came in, but since it came back and they brought that character in, it's just been fantastic.
I can sort of do it without the narrative. I just want to follow Hedlund for a day and make that a book.
He gets a spinoff.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yes. All right, next book, Monsters number 4, writer Marjorie M. Lau, art by Sana Takeda.
This was interesting because we got our first glimpses into the Arcanite world. And we also got the origins of the Arcanites who are half, because we found out they're Arcanite, well, the Arcanites are the half, they call them the Ancients. They're half ancient, half human. And the Ancients, they used to like keep humans as like fun little pets.
They said, and in some instances they said lovers.
Yeah, and they, you know, they'd sleep with them, but they never had kids. And then at one point, they just started having kids with them. They didn't know why.
Was this all explained at the end of the book again?
Yeah. The cat talking to the little cat.
Oh, by the way, what a horrific image at the end of this book.
The little cats were dipping mice in chocolate. And they were gonna eat them. But the, you know, their teacher's telling them the story of all this. I mean, they dealt with some of it in the book, but it was mostly just getting across that point that, you know, they weren't always all like little fox girls.
Yes.
They used to just be talking big foxes.
If this book wasn't so good, I'd have a problem with them just, you know, casually, you know, doing an info dump on the last page, but it's a good book.
It's a different way to do exposition, and in all honesty, when you're doing stuff like this, when you're doing world building, especially if it's history stuff, your two choices are you do something like this, where it's kind of clever, and it makes sense that there would be a teacher teaching children about the history of their world, or you have a character awkwardly go, okay, I'm going to explain the history of our world now. You live in our world, so you know all this, but I'm going to explain it anyway. It's just a different way of doing it.
But maybe do it at the beginning of the comic book then, maybe?
Maybe, but then it's so out of sync with, this is a very serious comic,
mm-hmm.
and to put the cute little cats, you know, making their chocolate mice, to put that at the front of the book and then have you go into the very serious story, which has like demon arm girl eating people.
Mm-hmm.
Or having her demon arm eat people. By the way, her demon arm is their god. We found out in this. That was the big discovery. The god they worship is contained within her body and has to eat people, including children, because it really wanted to eat the fox girl. But she went and found the one nice human or semi-nice human that they encountered in the last one who is still alive. But then the last page, the big thing was they found all these people who were cut in half. Like the humans were literally cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
She said something like, oh, that's a night saber or something. That's the only thing that could have done that. And we see a dude, by the way, one of the only men in this comic. He's got like big black wings and he flies down and he's got like a fancy scythe. So that's serious shit. Now, this character herself is, she's like a hunter, but a person hunter. Like she has a job.
I wasn't too clear on what her position was. Yeah,
but she has some kind of job because she was speaking to one of the ancients. It was a, what was she? A cat person? A wolf. She was like a wolf person. More animal-like than the ones we've seen. And she doesn't really trust her because she's half breed.
That's funny.
But the arc continues to be good and the story is, I think it's gaining more focus. Like, what's going on is starting to make more sense as they've shown us more of the world and explained more of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's turning into a really good book. Before this, it was just a sort of interesting book with good art, and now it's actually turning into a good book with good characters and good art. So much improved, and I enjoyed.
Yes, very much so. All right, next book, Rat Queens 15, writer Curtis J. Wiebe, art by Tess Fowler.
The girls found out something about Hannah.
We've known this as the reader, but yeah, this is where she's come out in front of her friends that what she did at the school, but more importantly, what she is.
Yeah, because they heard that she like summoned a demon to kill the school's ruling magical council. And mm-hmm. She informs us, no, I did not really summon a demon to do that. But her, what actually happened wasn't much better. It was just, I'm the one who fucking killed all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed fight again and she's using her demon mad, because what she did when she was at the school was to pass all her tests and stuff, she made a pact with the demon.
Yeah, because she was always good at magic, but the thing was she wasn't, book smart. She could learn the magic sort of just by, osmosis or just sort of feeling it out. But when she actually went to do the book stuff, she's like, I couldn't do it, so I had to, use this black magic to kind of, pass my classes. But the fact of the matter is I got caught. And she's like, it's the best thing to happen to me because really I shouldn't have been using that magic. And since then, I haven't used it ever since.
Yeah, so she ends up, fucking them all up, and Betty's all upset over all this because but Betty's her friend, and we got a lot of Betty being sad, which makes you feel bad because she looks like a little girl, even though she's a drunken whore. But, she looks like a cute little girl, so you feel really bad for her. And, her and Voodoo Girl are fighting over all this, but they decide, we have to go save her because she got kidnapped
mm-hmm.
by the school, who now wants to kill her because she's trying to help her dad, who they also want to get. But, I mean, one of my problems with this story is that she murdered their entire ruling group.
Yeah, and there's no explaining that away. She's clearly a murderer. It's like, how do you justify that?
But they're letting her like walk around. Like it doesn't make any sense to me. I know this is a different world, but that doesn't make any sense to me. And then they're almost like shocked when they show up to arrest her, and it's like, well, I know you're helping your dad and they don't like your dad right now, but given what you did, I think they would be coming after you anyway. But, we'll see, I guess.
Another great entry in this fantastic Image series.
Titties in it too.
Oh yeah, that was amazing. That was the
and Bush.
That not so much a big fan of.
Well, it's old days, dude. It's an old timey world. They didn't shave.
Yeah, I forget about that. Yeah.
The dwarf has a fucking beard half the time.
Well, since they met over to the new artist.
Well, it's because she's been too busy to shave it off.
Well, then it's also a way to make her different than all the girls to remind you that she's part dwarf.
It is really funny to see the chick walking around with a beard.
Unless you're into that kind of thing, right?
Hey. Beards.
Next book, Star of Number 7, writer Brian Wood.
Oh my god, I didn't read this.
Oh.
You missed out, dude. This is another contender for Book of the Week.
I'm gonna download it.
His daughter, basically has, taken over for him on the Star TV show. She becomes a major celebrity chef. They give her they throw money at her. She's got a book deal, her own spinoff. And we also find out what Gavin's plans are. Remember, he left the show and he was He had a plan in place, but we didn't know exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he's renovating local restaurants and improving the local neighborhoods by buying local foods and training up chefs for these restaurants with his own team as a means of community outreach.
Yeah, and it's not like he's doing this and then just, you know, making it so expensive that nobody can afford it. He's making this food, this real great high-quality food, but making it affordable by, you know, just selling it to as many people who can in this community. So it sort of makes sense in a business aspect.
I have a question. How does this improve anyone's life aside from them getting some better food?
The businesses start getting better. Well, they kind of explain a little bit in the book. It's like, well, you know, if you give them the benefit of doubt and you buy from them locally, you'll force them to improve what kind of meat that they sell and what kind of chickens, how they raise their chickens. And it improves the local grocery stores because, you know, you got local businesses. It's basically economic stimulation through food.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, he comes in, like, specifically in this book, he mentions there's this chicken person, they do things by bare minimum just to, you know, make a quick profit as he can. But he says, if I buy so many chickens, I can ask the person who's raising them, I want them fed a certain way, and by that means he's easily able to bring up their lifestyle.
Okay.
Yeah. But then also all the people that worked at this restaurant previously, instead of just firing them all and him bringing in his own people, he decides he's just going to keep everybody that was working at the chicken place before and just make them his new staff.
Yeah, he already said he was doing that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it'll be like that bar rescue. It's like they train up the chefs. He's got his own team. The ones from the TV show, he got a team of them that he brings in to teach them. So basically, they clean up the place, they fix it up, they improve the menu and the food, and he kind of lets them go from there. But you know, he still owns the place. But he keeps the local staff in place. So it's like, it's not losing anything. It's still a fried chicken joint with a slightly different restaurant and with better food.
Okay. You know,
better menu and better food.
And they go into the business aspect, you know, a meal will cost, the cost of the meal is, $150, but, you know, after they stack on their price on it, they still manage to make like 50% off of that. And they're not charging very much, but the way they make their money back is when you see them open the restaurant for the very first time, there's just a ton of people that come in.
Yeah, it's $1.50 for the food, but they charge like $6.50 a plate. And it's like, that's still half what it would cost anywhere else.
Well, yeah, if you're going to a nice place. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then he puts over the point that it's better than anything they'll eat in a given week. So they're not only are they eating better, but they're eating something that's still affordable.
Yeah, no, and okay. At the end of the issue, their restaurant is kind of visited by, I'm not sure who they were. I'm assuming they were the network people thugs, and they beat up Gavin.
Yeah, with a baseball bat, and I'm not sure why. I don't know if you can figure out, Dave, but I don't know what this has to do with anything. Why did they?
I'm not sure. Like, what would be the motivation for them to beat him up?
Because the Star Show is still doing really well. The daughter's over. They offered her all this business deal, so I understand why they're upset.
Well, maybe it's, you've also got to remember, we're in a, It's not really post-apocalyptic, but it's like pre-apocalyptic world where the 1% control absolutely everything. And maybe it's a case of like, oh, you can't be giving poor people this shit.
Yeah, maybe.
We gotta keep the status quo.
Yeah, cause he's improving local, businesses. So maybe it's a corporation thing or something.
Yeah, and these people are supposed to be poor. So let's keep them poor.
Okay, interesting enough. In our final image book, Symmetry Number 4, writer Mike Hotkins, art by Raphael Lenko.
Read this, but I have an excuse for not reading it.
Mm-hmm.
I went on to Comixology to buy this,
mm-hmm.
and because I cannot pirate this book, not that we support that on Comic Conversation, but I always buy this book, mm-hmm. and I went to Comixology to buy it. Realized I erased all my saved passwords in Google on accident, and I couldn't find my credit card because it was in my car, it turned out. But by the time I realized all this, we were doing the show.
That's fine. I've read the book. They sort of capped what they were telling, the certain story so far, and it's, you know, it's basically the same story they've been telling so far. Humanity's awful. And the robots are sort of there to sort of, you know, try to steer them in the right direction. But they have a bit, kind of a big bombshell in this week's issue. They brought up the fact that they try to keep humanity separate because, you know, that's, I guess, for a reason why the humanity programmed that way, that if, you know, if they mixed whatever, that there'd be chaos.
But yeah, they talked about that.
But they learn from studying humanity after a while, you know, if they're stagnant, then eventually they'll become less happy. So what they said is every now and then they'd inject some new stuff. So they kind of maybe allude that maybe this whole thing has been orchestrated by the robots.
But would that matter since they're all given like mood controlling drugs? Like, would you have to?
Well, I think just from humanity's sake, they would build a tolerance up to that drug, or whatever.
Oh. Okay.
So they said that the program that was made by humans was made so it can evolve with humans, but sort of in that way that, you know, humanity has been injected into the machines. So they still have the best intentions, the robots, but because their program is the way it is, they're sort of, you know, turning humanity in a certain direction.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's sort of a divergent, considering that the story they were telling was humanity's awful and robots are sort of their saving grace. But
that's not what the story was about, though. The story was about humanity was in fact awful. Like, humanity as it is awful,
mm-hmm.
and people thought they found a better way. The robots are, and always have been in this book, they're tools. That's really all they are.
Yeah, they're a reflection of humanity. They can try to, you know, stick to the ideals that were programmed into them, but the fact of the matter is they were still programmed by humans, and that, right. you know, through their evolution over years, that's going to become corrupted.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay. Let's move into the Marvel section. All new X-Men number 6, writer Dennis Hopeless, art by Mark Bagley.
I like this.
Yeah, this is a fun little issue. It was mostly just a fight throughout the entire issue, but it kind of gave you the characters' reflections of, you know, like where they are in life right now, like they're reflecting in life, you know, like in their thoughts.
That was what I liked about it, because they got a little focus on each character and what they were thinking. Some of them, it got more into their current life. Some of them, it got into them thinking about the future. So that was really interesting that you could have a big fight. Another thing to note from this is they even pointed out, like, Blob isn't the way Blob used to be. Like, he's actually a threat now.
Mm-hmm.
They did this because at the end of the issue, we have Toad doing something, and, you know,
he kidnapped Cyclops.
Yeah, but you're to assume that since Blob is now more dangerous, then Toad would also be more dangerous. These old jobber villains are now a threat.
Well, they sort of brought the fact that Blob, he was just minding his own business. He's a connoisseur of, you know, fine food. And when the X-Men showed up and ruined everything because he lives where he lives, I think France, right?
Well, no, he was just visiting, but he was a dick to everyone. Well, he kicked everyone out of the restaurant, and he was basically forcing the cook to do this. Like, he wasn't just a nice guy who showed up to a restaurant.
Okay. But then he was also upset because he's a big fatty. He wants food, but he realized all the good places are going to be closed. He's like, you can say sorry all you want, but
I can't even get half decent takeout. But they had Wolverine put over how, you know, my problem was I went after him up front. I didn't realize how fast he was. I didn't realize how strong he was. Even his skin is a lot tougher than you'd think, so it's hard to cut through him. Like, I didn't consider any of this. I just dove in. You had Warren there, Angel, with his new fire wings.
He made it a point to do more or less what Wolverine did. He went all out. He managed to take down Blob, but Wolverine saw it from Warren's point of view, you know, that...
No, she didn't. She didn't see it from his point of view. That was the thing.
Oh.
What he intended was she'd see it, you know, like, he gets all worried when she does these horribly dangerous things. She didn't get all worried. They slightly indicated she got turned on by watching it.
Okay.
Reckless.
Okay, and then maybe I read that wrong.
Yeah, and jamming into the ship, because he's like, weren't you scared? And she's like, no. She just pushed it off. She's like, no, it's kind of hot.
Freaking, so, he ended up stabbing Blob in the eye.
Ouch.
Yeah, with a piece of the rubble from the building, he just straight fucking stabbed him in the eye, which was funny because Wolverine had considered doing this to him. Like, well, I can't get through his skin. And I probably won't be able to, I might not be able to hamstring him, but I can always go for the eyes. But that might you know, if I go for his head, I might kill him, and I can't do that. And then he just fucking stabs him in the eye. That was great.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the next issue, there's something going on with Toad. He's like drunk or something.
Yeah, he hit Cyclops because he was drunk and he was driving drunk and he accidentally hit Cyclops. So he decides to just bring Cyclops with him. Like, I don't know for whatever reason why.
He's
trying chains him in the catacombs beneath France.
Yeah. And apparently, I don't know if he has a plan or if it's some magic.
Well, he's clearly depressed because he brings it, you know, there's a bunch of skulls there and he's like, well, what's the point of life? He's like, you know, eventually you're just going to die and it doesn't mean anything.
If he ever got over, the old girl, remember he was, Husk. In love,
That probably never happened in the new continuity.
Well, he could still be drunk because he's upset about what happened with Husk and, Wolverine and the X-Men run.
Theoretically. Sugar Man was in this issue.
No,
that was the next X-Men book.
Oh, was it?
Do you want to go into that now? Since you brought it up?
Yeah, because I already mentioned it.
Extraordinary X-Men number 8, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Ken Lashley.
So, they find out that they're, because mutants can't be born anymore because of the Terrigen Mist Club.
Correct.
But they find like 600 mutants who all suddenly appeared at once.
Yeah.
So, for some reason, Colossus decides this would be a good first mission for his team of misfits.
Yes, and so, Storm agreed.
Yeah, Storm agreed. So they go off to
Japan
to Japan to find this, and it's Sugar Man, who we haven't seen in forever because he's a ridiculous character design.
There's a reason for that, yes.
But he's a geneticist. He worked with Mr. Sinister over there in Age of Apocalypse, so. He grew mutants.
Yeah, he's breeding embryos to develop mutants, and his plan is to transport them into the future.
Yeah, so the Terrigen Cloud couldn't get to him, I guess.
And so like they fight him off. Wolverine cuts off his tongue.
Gross.
Yeah, so they travel to the future to try to recover him, but you know the thing is when they sent those embryos into the future was those embryos plus Glob and friends, and Colossus. So they travel to the future and they've aged.
Yeah, they're all older and they're like, oh, but this was so stupid, especially with the X-Men because they're so into time travel lately. When they're like, oh, but how can you be so old? You only left a couple seconds ago. And it's like, you dumb fuckers. You seriously don't understand the basics of time travel.
And here's the thing. They've done it so many times, you think they've learned by now.
Yeah, but whatever. That was fine. It was just so they could get over that. Glob still seems like kind of an idiot.
Well, that's been consistent.
And, who's what's his name? Got bigger. Anole?
Yeah, Anole. He can now, instead of having a shielded arm, his entire body, he can cover it in the green shit he has, and Martha, the floating brain, now has a giant robot body.
Awesome.
So she's like Krang.
Yes, except not in the belly, and it doesn't look like a person.
Unfortunately.
I think Krang is back, by the way, in those comics. So.
And then they come to find out that in the future, Colossus is the leader of the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse. It's him, Moon Knight, Deadpool, and I don't remember. I don't know what else that
is. Yeah,
it looks like Venom, maybe. Would it be Venom? Because it was like a black goo and it had like teeth.
Venom's not a mutant.
But neither is Moon Knight.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was Moon Knight.
That looked exactly like Moon Knight.
Had wings.
It looked like Moon Knight, dude. It had like the moon thing.
It looked a bit like Moon Knight, but I just didn't think that made.
Isn't technically Deadpool not a? Not a mutant as well?
Yeah,
no, Deadpool is a mutant.
Okay. Not by birth, right?
No, he's a mutant.
Oh, okay. I always thought they gave him the gene.
Mm-mm.
Okay. My mistake.
They did experiments to him that made, I guess, it made his healing factor stronger and made him crazy.
Oh, okay.
But he was a mutant. But it was just kind of funny seeing Deadpool standing there because it's still just Deadpool. Like, what? I guess Apocalypse in the future would be Evan.
Yeah, I think that's what they're getting at, yeah.
Yeah, but why would he pick fucking Deadpool of all people? Like, because Deadpool can't be mind controlled. So, I guess he must have just asked him, like, hey, you want to be horseman of the apocalypse?
He's be a horseman or I'll kill you.
He's like, well, it's 1,000 years in the future, I guess, whatever.
Lols.
Oh, they had a backup story. It was the one about magic and that one mutant that she found, the one that has, like, magic powers.
Yeah, this was an odd little story.
Strange.
Yeah, we find out the reason why she has control over magic is she has, like, this mutant power where it's something about language and absorbing shit around her.
She has Doug Friend's powers.
Sort of. Doug Friend can do other powers, but he can't really do the stuff that she does. Because when her mutant powers surface, she was in a magic world. So everything that is around her that is magic, she now has absorbed. And it's permanent, apparently.
But to bring up for future characters, Dr. Strange pointed out, since there was so much magic around, it like overloaded your powers. So eventually you will probably get the ability to absorb other things. But right now, that's kind of turned off, and it's all on magic because you absorb so much.
I come to find out in this issue, the X-Haven is in limbo. When did this happen?
First issue.
I know, first issue of this run, dude.
I have no recollection of this.
You don't remember them fighting demons in limbo?
Yeah, but I don't remember why they were fighting
demons. To be fair, we read a lot of books, so it's very likely you've forgotten.
Yeah. It was in there, though, dude.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I believe you. I couldn't remember. I was like, really?
This yeah, it was.
That's fine.
In this issue, they showed how it got to Limbo.
Yeah.
Which is Scarlet Witch, Doctor Strange, Brother Voodoo, magic. I really hate them throwing magic into this shit because, like, I get it. Her name is Magic. But are we going to pretend now that she's one of the most powerful magical characters in the Marvel Universe on par with Doctor Strange?
There was another guy in there too, I think. I can't remember what his name was.
Yeah, but the X-Men need a magic character, and that's really the only one they got.
No, they don't. But it's alright. She's still the least over one for me.
Well, with most people in general, yeah, but she's there for a purpose though.
It's okay, cause she's got titties.
Well, so do the other X-Men women, but she has magic. Okay, next book. Astonishing Ant-Man #6, writer Nick Spencer.
This is about Cassie and how she's sad face because she doesn't have powers anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
She has a plan to get powers from the broker. She's going to pretend to be a villain and then betray him. But he was like, oh, you're not trying to just get, you know, powers and then betray me, are you?
Yeah, but the thing is, he assumed that's what she was doing.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, here's the deal. You go after this bad guy for me because he's stealing my tech. I'll let you keep the powers and then you can walk away. So he knew she was trying to fuck him, and he still, you know, he's still gonna give her the powers. The only thing was, she demanded she gets size-changing powers.
And also, like, she can control insects. So it's basically like Ant-Man power. She's like the Wasp.
Yeah, but there's her new name is Stinger, but can she, do we assume she won't be able to get big? Because he said she stole he gave her stolen Pym particles. And the Pym particles let you get big or small. So, she will still be able to get big, right?
I would assume so.
But she's called Stinger.
Maybe she can get as big as a bull.
Well.
And as quick as a cat. Her name is Stinger, though. I couldn't know myself.
It took me a minute to get that. She's a girl called Sting.
Katie Bishop had a little guest appearance in this issue too.
Yeah, because they were buddies.
Yeah.
And she
she was trying to talk her down. She's like, "Come on! If I had the choice between being a normal person and being a superhero, I'd go back to being a normal person."
Yeah. This is what set her off into going to the power broker, because Kate Bishop just came to visit her because her dad was in town doing rich guy stuff. And she's hanging out with her, and then she's like, oh, I gotta go. I got a meeting or something. And she's like, well, she's full of shit because I hacked into her phone and I'm tracking her, and she's going to like this shitty abandoned warehouse. She's going to go do superhero stuff. Didn't want to tell me because I feel bad about it. So she decides to try to help Kate fight villains, criminals,
mm-hmm.
weapon stealers, whatever they are, it doesn't matter. But one of them almost kills her. So that makes her realize, I really need to be doing this superhero stuff. It's all I know, but I can't do it without powers. Kate Bishop does it without powers, but she's a lot more capable than me. So I need to get my powers back. And that's why she went to the power broker.
Yep. And that's where the issue just cuts off, where she's this new quote unquote supervillain, Stinger.
Well,
it's gotta be a swerve, right?
No, they made it clear she's not a villain.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Cause remember, he said that, oh, this is what you're trying to do. Well, if that's the case, then, you can still keep the powers, but you just take out Darren Cross. And then she found out the truth about Darren Cross taking her
home. Oh, okay. I was mistaken.
Yeah,
cause
she didn't know any of that. She thought like she just passed out.
Ah.
And this might bring her back to her dad. Because, you know, her dad saved her during all that, and she had no idea. And due to the fact that she was captured because she was his kid, like, he could make the justification of, like, it's not safe for you to blah, 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 and she'll understand it better, and she won't hate her dad anymore.
Yep.
That'd be nice.
Certainly would be. All right, let's move on to our next book, Captain Marvel number 3, writer Tara Butters, art by Chris Anka.
This went in a really weird direction I didn't expect it to go in.
Yeah, it was sort of just out of nowhere.
Yeah, so so in the last issue, Abigail Brand arrested the scientist girl, thinking she was the one who was, doing all the fucked up shit on the ship. Turned out it was Captain Marvel who was, okay, it's kind of a trippy story. The Kree fought these aliens way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, Marvel, the original Captain Marvel, before he was Captain Marvel, when he was just like a Kree soldier,
mm-hmm.
he was on a mission where they blew up their planet. So some of these guys, though, they escaped and they have like this weird shit where they can like fuck with your head and control your mind sort of stuff. So basically Captain Marvel, either because of them or because of something else, is reliving Marvel's, and we have a guy who used to be Marvel on the show, so this is all very confusing. She's reliving all his memories, and these aliens are coming back to kill her because she is Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not where I expected this story to go at all. It's interesting, and it gives the character some, you know, she does technically have a legacy, which they never deal with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it gives us some of that and makes the book a little more cosmic, which is good because she's stationed on a fucking space station in outer space, so it should be cosmic. But, yeah, so she's dealing with this. They locked her up in a prison thingy. Because they can't trust her.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did a deal where she could experience the, because she can't, she couldn't remember the things that she was remembering after they happened when she was like doing fucked up stuff, like trying to pilot a ship and go blow up aliens' home planet. But they made it so that, like, they did something to her brain where she could still experience it, but she would be conscious during it so she could tell them what was going on. So, I mean, we'll see what happens with crazy Captain Marvel.
And then there's also sort of the subplot where she's losing her powers.
Yeah, she's losing her powers. I'm not entirely clear on that. I don't think they really told us.
No, but whatever seems to be happening all seems to be affecting her powers. And they also seem to think somebody on the what's the name of the group? The Alpha Flight group is a traitor.
Yeah, still a traitor other than her, because the indication was it was her. But they then hinted, no, it's not her. There's still got to be somebody else. But they didn't tell us who. It's probably Puck. He's fucking short.
Aw, I like Puck. It's one of the
trust guys named Puck, dude. Fucking Real World season 3.
Nah, yeah, you got me there. I kind of disagree with that. All right, let's move on to our next book, International Iron Man number 1, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Alex Maleev.
You know, there's
this what I expected.
There is something that really bugged me about this issue.
Okay, so they do flashbacks 20 years ago with Tony in college. He's at Cambridge College. This is 1996. And they have smartphones and Google.
Secret Wars and, I can't justify this.
He's Tony Stark.
Google?
Well, this was all...
A smartphone, I can be like, okay, I can maybe, like, accept that because, like, he's rich. He has...
Dude, he was in Cambridge. Maybe in England they had advanced technology.
Google?
Yeah, they had that shit in England back in the 90s.
This is something that we read that learned a cross story that was supposed to be from the 1950s, and this kid's recording it and putting it on YouTube.
You know what? You know what I was thinking about with this?
No.
This was supposed to be about Tony going to find his parents, and the entire issue was to give us background on a new villain.
Yes.
Literally, the entire issue.
It's like, basically, you know what this reminded me of? This is almost like Elektra and Daredevil, except it's some chick and...
And we've never heard about her before.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Tony, when he was younger, met a nice rich girl in England, and I don't know, they're going to continue the flashback, I think, because we didn't get the end of it.
Yeah.
Her dad was a rival of his dad.
Yeah, but Tony did not get along with his dad, even though it wasn't really his dad. Tony didn't get along with him, and Tony paid to go to school and stuff all on his own money because he had his own patents.
Yeah. And he goes to dinner with her family and everything, and Hydra tries to kill her and her family.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony gets involved and apparently saves him after getting shot. And, you know, there's a battle going on in the present. Like, he's fighting her in the future, I guess, and some henchmen. And at the end, you know, after he saves them, he doesn't want to fight anymore. Apparently, he doesn't want to be Iron Man anymore. But they show her, like, with an eye patch now.
And an important thing to note in this book is the whole point of it was there was going to be another Iron Man book that Bendis also wrote, but it was going to have a completely different tone. I will give them that this does, in fact, have a completely different tone.
That's the tone that we want, though.
Art's nice.
The art's good. The art's totally different. The writing is fine. It's fine. It's a bit of a slower pace book, but that's because we're building a character. It's much more serious, and it's a lot more violent than the other Iron Man book. The other Iron Man book is him fighting robot ninjas. This is characters being graphically shot in the head. So they set off very quickly that this book is different from that book. But the whole he's traipsing around the globe is not really going on yet.
Well, he did mention it. He said that.
And even him looking for his parents isn't really going on yet. And they mentioned that in the, you know, the this is what's going on in Iron Man thing. Like, they mentioned his parents. And all we got about his parents in this one were he didn't really get along with his dad.
Nope.
But, you know, tying in this character who's current but is from his past will probably get us more into that. I think they're laying groundwork before he goes off to find his real parents.
Question, do we keep reading this book?
I want to keep reading this because I like the art.
It was all right.
Yeah, it's just the flashback stuff, if we can get away from that, that might be better. Unless it's flashbacks to, like, his real parents and what they've been doing. I want to read that. But, I mean, the thing is, the other Iron Man book, it's fun, but that's all it is. It's just fun.
Yeah.
This book feels like it has some oomph behind it. So I want to read it a little bit more.
Okay. I'll give it to you then. All right. Since I know you hate these, Alex, but I'm going to do it anyway. Speaking of parents, let's talk this week's Spider-Woman number 5. Writer Dennis Hopeless, art by Javier Rodriguez.
This was such a good book.
Oh, I love it. I take back everything I said for doubting you on this book, because the last couple of issues I really liked, but this one was a contender for Book of the Week.
This was Spider-Woman trying to come to terms with the fact that she's now a single mother.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the first three pages were
It's not just a single mother, because the guy who takes care of the kid later on in the book also mentions that this is just that stuff that comes along with being a new parent.
No, it is, and I can talk about that because I got a kid. But, you know, the first three pages is her covered in spit up. Her fucking apartment's a mess, which that part doesn't really make sense because the kid is, you know, 2 months old. He's not fucking up your house yet, but, you know, fair enough. It's trying to show she can't get a handle on things. She's all worried about how she's not going to be able to do this. And, you know, the art's great. The art is absolutely great. That fucking kid is adorable.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put over the art real quick because he did a really clever thing with the colorist. They finally get to the point when, like, she's hanging out with Captain Marvel because they're buddies. And Captain Marvel tells her, like, girl, you got to get out for a night. So she lets Porcupine watch her kid.
Big mistake.
Which, no, it wasn't.
But I'm saying, it's one of those things on paper, it seems like a big mistake.
But I felt this was such clever use of art because I remembered the first time me and Lauren went out without Jack. All we could think was, what is Jack doing right now? We did not have fun at all in what we did. I think, like, we tried to go out drinking. And we had absolutely no fun because we were just worried about the fucking baby. To show this in the art, what they did was...
This is great, by the way.
They had... It was like She-Hulk and Patsy Walker and Captain Marvel and stuff. But they went to all these different places. Like, they're going to the club. They're going out to eat. They're drinking, whatnot. Everybody was drawn with completely black faces. Like, not they were in blackface, but I mean... Their faces were blacked out and they would do the little thought bubbles with what they were all thinking about. And it was, you know, stuff like, you know, oh, I should have another drink.
It was, instead of text, they were just emojis or whatever they were thinking.
Yeah. They put emojis in for what they were thinking, but hers, every time they went to hers, it was, she was running this story through her head about how, like, Porcupine fucking didn't know how to put the kid in a diaper, so he's breaking out tape, and then he's trying to warm up the bottle of water, but he forgets about it, and the house lights on fire, and then he has to escape through the window. But they're showing this throughout, and the reason all the people's faces were blacked out was because she was physically incapable of having fun, because all she could do was worry about her fucking kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a clever way of doing that without actually saying it, that I absolutely fucking love that. It turns out she ends up rushing back to the house because she can't stop worrying about this. And Porcupine has to calm her down because the kid's asleep. He was a dad before. Well, he still is a dad. I mean, he brings up
the fact that he was a dad, but the fact of the matter was because was he a villain at some point? Because the name sounds familiar. Wasn't he?
He was.
He says, you know, he got out of prison. He was on probation, so he couldn't leave the house. He was on house arrest. So when he has first kid, he had nothing. There's nothing else he could do but take care of the kid 24/7. So he figured, you know, that's when he learned to be a good parent.
And, you know, she's all, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I'm a terrible mother, and I can't, you know, do this and do that, and I'm all worried about it. And he's like, hey, listen, that's everyone. That's everyone with their first kid. That's how it is. He's like, but it gets easier as it goes on. He's like, it gets easier. I promise you, I'm fucking living proof of it. It gets easier. And then she's hanging out with Captain Marvel again. Luro is right, Folder. She tells the story of how her kid came to be. We find out who the father is. And the father
or
is...
Or do we?
We're never going to find out who the father is because she got a sperm donor.
And
she decides she wants to have a kid.
And we had a couple of swerves along the way. She mentions that she's, you know, seeing this one guy.
It was online dating. It wasn't that serious, but her period is late. She took three pregnancy tests and she wasn't pregnant. And this made her realize she wanted a kid. She wanted to do it on her own. The only real way to do it on your own is either go pick up a dude in a bar or you get the artificial insemination. So that's what she did. Has no idea who the dad is. No idea whatsoever.
So clever.
And that's not the focus of the book. It shouldn't be because it's about her as a single mom and a superhero. But then, you know, so they skip ahead in time a little bit and they show some stuff like she's getting more comfortable with the kid. There's a supervillain fight in downtown when she's walking she's got the baby in the stroller, pushing it down the street and I don't even remember who the villain was, like the fucking Warthog or something. It's some jobber villain. She's walking with Hawkeye, and Hawkeye's trying to fight him but can't do it. The guy comes charging towards him, and she's a new mom, So she goes absolutely batshit insane, starts pounding the fuck out of him. There's a fucking baby here. What are you doing? And he's like, I'm sorry, Miss Spider-Woman. I'll never do it again. After she beats the shit out of him. But in the end, she's more comfortable with the kid. She's okay with her babysitter. And she decides she can still go out and do superhero stuff.
Sweet.
So she puts on her costume and she goes out to do some superheroing. And we're off to our second arc of the book, which is seeing if she can actually cope with this.
I have to imagine she will.
Hopefully she will. Because this is the only time I have ever liked this character.
She's usually written as just a horrible human being.
Yeah. Yeah. But she's just so likable and like, I've been a father, so I understand some of the stuff she's going through. Not all of it, but some of it. The only thing on that with it being real I have a problem with is, you know, she's apparently independently wealthy and doesn't really have to work. And her job, she works with Urich. They have a private detective agency. A lot of people in Marvel have private detective agencies. he's like, hey, but our company offers unlimited maternal pay. So he pretty much told her, you can stay out as long as you need to and you'll still get paid. And it's like, okay, that's fucking more unrealistic than the goddamn
superpowers.
Her having spider powers and jumping around and shit, but whatever. It was nice of him and she did say she'd be coming back to work. So there will continue to be stories in this book.
All right. Let's bring Dave back into the conversation. Scarlet Witch number 4, writer James Robinson, art by Marguerite Savage.
I told you the artist was only for the Witch's Road.
Bah.
Because they switched back to Dylan for the last couple pages.
Got me excited for no reason.
Yeah, the Witch's Road is basically a pathway. It's like a magic-like pathway where mostly witches go through. But
warlocks, too.
Yeah, warlocks, too. And it's also, there's also, like, time travel-y, like, you know, different times, different timelines of people kind of can coexist. Yeah. Time.
The way they kind of explained it was, if you go to the Witch's Robe, it doesn't matter what time period you go on to it from, it's all like kind of existing at the same time because it's other dimensional and magic.
She meets up her dead mother, who was apparently a Scarlet Witch herself. She called herself the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, I had to keep reminding myself that we're in new continuity here.
Yeah.
With stuff like this. And this, I mean, the main focus of this issue was they're trying to produce an arch nemesis for Scarlet Witch.
She is basically, Doctor Strange 2.0.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, she doesn't have the house. She's not the master of the mystic arts or the Sorcerer Supreme.
There you go.
She's just a big deal female magician.
Yeah.
Or witch, I guess it would be. But no, her arch nemesis is now the Emerald Wizard. The Scarlet Witch's arch nemesis is the Emerald Wizard.
It's Emerald Warlock.
Oh, sorry, Emerald Warlock. Yeah, because he's Irish.
Yeah, well, yeah, in this issue, he explains what his motivations and origin were. A bunch of wizards in Ireland exiled his family to America. And so
Before it was America, though.
And his mom ended up dying, so it was him and his, like, siblings, another family or whatever. He wanted revenge against the people who exiled him and Ireland. So he, I don't know if he killed his family or, like...
He did.
Yeah, and he absorbed all their powers.
So yeah, he said he killed them to take what power they had.
Yeah, so he became even more powerful. So yeah, he was killing the lifeline of all the people who exiled him. So all their descendants. That's what he was doing.
Because it's like there was something he couldn't do until they were all dead. Like he couldn't go back until they were all dead or something.
Yeah, because he needed to kill the entire bloodline in order to return to Ireland. Because, you know, he wants revenge on Ireland.
Yeah, and to give you an idea, this was 1,000 years ago. So that bloodline would have spread pretty fucking far. in a thousand years.
And it took him that long to track them all down.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he so they get into a battle on the Witch's Road, and you know the Emerald Warlock, you know, he thought he had her, but apparently she was leading him into the Witch's Road because apparently she becomes more powerful there.
Mm-hmm.
So she's able to defeat him, but he manages to escape. So she's at one of the Irish airports, and apparently there's some stuff running afoul because there's a bunch of birds that all of a sudden appear, and she says that's a sign of like death coming.
There were a lot of birds.
Yeah.
It was a good issue.
Yeah, I like
it's weird because Scarlet Witch is a long-standing character, but in this series, they basically have to redefine her past, the way she is currently. They're having to give her a villain set. They're having to do so much in this comic because this character, I think more than anyone else, has changed after Secret Wars.
Well, remember before that too, they explained that she's no longer mutant and
yeah. You know,
before that,
she was no longer a mutant, but as far as we knew, she still had the same backstory. Now she has a completely different history.
Well, it's not completely different because she's still was once married to Vision and.
Did no more mutants ever happen now?
I think with this new continuity, I think it's like Age of Ultron.
Well, because it's just, she seems set in this whole, I'm a witch. I do witch stuff.
I think it's not so much a new continuity, it's just lazy editorial, not keeping up with the continuity.
I don't even think it's that. I think they're just ignoring it.
Because it's the only way this story really works and what they're doing makes sense is if you think the old continuity doesn't matter.
And even,
I'm not offended by that.
Her as a witch though has been, you know, it was touched upon a lot in the Avengers, like back in the 200 and something issue range.
Mm-hmm.
And then during Bendis's run, they brought up the whole magic thing a lot too. So they've been building up to the magic thing. Now it's just like, okay, now that she's no longer mutant, she doesn't have to bother with no more mutants anymore and dealing with mutants in general. So now she could just, you know, dabble in magic the whole time.
Oh, by the way. You remember how I was putting over her new costume?
Mm-hmm.
My wife hates the new Scarlet Witch costume.
Yeah, but you know, but the thing is they took the new costume really from the movie.
Well, she probably doesn't like that one either, then. My wife was always a big fan of the Scarlet Witch costume. I don't know why, but just in particular, she really liked that costume. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting over this one because basically she's wearing a black shirt, black pants, and a fucking red trench coat. I think it's a cool image.
Yeah.
And it makes more sense given that she's not really a superhero anymore. I show it to my wife and she's like, God, why did they change it? She looked cool before. And I'm like, I don't know. I liked it. She's like, it's kind of boring.
The answer to that being, of course, cause of the movies.
Maybe the movies.
But you know what? I do like this better than, cause I always felt that the other costume was just, more like, why would you
ass and titties?
Why would she wear heels?
Yeah.
To look good.
Well, she was magic. I had this big thing last week where I was really offended by women's portrayal in comics.
I bet that didn't last long.
I still am. Because you got...
Apologies.
Like, yeah, her titties are still coming out. But other than that, she's pretty much 95% covered. And... if you're gonna get into a fight, you probably want to wear something like this more than you would your fucking high-heeled boots and, you know, your outfit where your tits are falling out. Like, I don't know why that suddenly started to bug me. I think it's because Kamala is so over with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, like,
well, Kamala
doesn't have to be, like, this fucking girl who you look at and you're like, oh yeah, I want to fuck her. Like, Her character's great, and it doesn't rely on that at all.
Well, she's a teenager, and B...
Well, still, you could do it with adults.
B, if you've seen the way other artists draw her, you may think otherwise.
Well, I have seen the way other artists draw her, and I don't... She looks fine and all new. damn it.
All right. Next book, Star Brand and Nightmask number 4, writer Greg Wiseman, art by Dominique Stanton.
Honestly, I thought this was fucking great.
It's a fun little issue.
I really like this book. And it's somehow not getting canceled yet, which is good because the story he's doing isn't going to end soon. The bad guy is the in-betweener.
Very much so.
Yeah, we found that out in the last page. There were the two concurrent stories. One of them was Starbrand died at the end of this issue. Nightmask was out talking to Eternity and his kids, you know, fucking gravity, entropy, and somebody else who had declared that the world had to end to remain balanced, or to keep balance, because the Earth has been supposed to ending, but it never ends, and because the Earth never ends, the universe never ends, because the universe never ends, Eternity's kids can't do their job. Which is terrible. So they had given their power to Graviton, Nitro, and I don't even remember who the other fucking guy was, but he was the one who killed Starbrand. But Nightmask is out in space, but he's got a connection to Starbrand, so he realizes he's gonna die, but he points out they have like time dilation abilities. So we cut back to Starbrand, who's like, okay, I'm gonna be dead in 5 seconds. So I gotta figure out what to do here. So he, Ice Guy stabbed him, so he said, okay, I change the ice so it's not ice anymore, and then I take the atoms in it and reconfigure them so that they rebuild my skin and my internal organs. And then I have to, all this power I'm releasing, because his problem was, if Starbrand dies, he's gonna blow up fucking Earth.
That's what they're hoping to bank on, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they were hoping for. So he's like, okay, now I gotta redirect all this fucking energy I'm pumping out. So he's got 5 seconds to do all this. He does it all without Nightmask's help.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmask realizes that they've got like these little cords that the big cosmic-y bad guys are sending out to overpower Nitro and Graviton and Ice Guy. So he basically redirects using his portals, he redirects the cords into the Superflow, which is it's the Marvel Comics bleed. It's the area between dimensions.
Correct.
So they just shoot out to there, and then he sends them away. You know, there's a third guy who is a German dude who is just, we later find out, the in-betweener's messenger, but he goes off to go meet with the in-betweener, who declares, like, no, we have to make balance and we have to kill them. Rawr.
Rawr.
But Starbrand is back at the dorm, and they had their first party, and he's trying to see if the RA there is into him.
He is.
He uses his cosmic powers to see through the fucking wall of his dorm room.
And this cosmic hearing, so he can hear what's going on.
Yeah, to hear her talk about how she likes him, but it's not really appropriate because she's the RA, and he's all hyped because she likes him. But then one of the other girls likes Nightmask, who sometimes comes off as really normal and sometimes comes off as a giant fucking weirdo.
Yeah, he's standoff, awkward.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what his gimmick is, but so what they did in this issue was they gave us action, they gave us characters demonstrating their powers in pretty great detail. Starbrand, by the way, appears to be fucking, who's the motherfucker from DC with the fire head?
Oh, Firestorm. Yeah, Firestorm.
Yeah, he's pretty much Firestorm, but he can shoot big lasers easier. Like that, I mean, when he was describing what he was doing, that's fucking Firestorm's powers, but whatever.
But he's just one dude.
Yeah, but he's, well, he has Nightmask in his head, kind of.
Yeah, a little bit.
He's Dr. Whatever. I don't know Firestorm's current status. Yeah, we got all this big cosmic stuff, but then we also had a story about some kids in college. And they were both good.
It here's the thing. It's a lighthearted story that has as a subplot a deadly serious story about the entire world being blown up.
Yeah, and it's weird that the subplot is the serious story about the world being blown up.
It's not too heavy, and it doesn't, you know, weigh on the majority of the story of being all lighthearted stuff of them just in college, meeting people, Star Brand trying to get at a girl.
No, it all reads well though, and it's clever. I'm glad for whatever reason this book is getting a reprieve, because I really like it and I want to see where the story ends.
Well, it's Greg Wiseman. He has all this work and doing kid shows and whatnot. So
he's in tight with Disney.
So good for us. We get to benefit, even though this series doesn't sound particularly well.
Again, this would be a horrible children's series, so that can't be their idea. It'd be absolutely terrible.
But then they know the audience of comic book readers, so it's good by me.
Yep.
Okay, next book, Uncanny Inhumans, number 6, writer Charles Soule, art by Brandon Peterson.
Action-packed issue?
It was.
Yeah.
Putting over Black Bolt like a boss, and... Yep. Reader almost became a pedophile.
Yeah. Hey,
on accident. On accident. I said on accident.
Yeah, I defend him because I know the one Inhuman detective was like, she's 16. He's like, what?
He's like, I'm fucking blind. I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, oh, come on, Frank. A lot of this issue, which weirdly, because I had said all new is all about the new Inhumans and Crystal. And this one is about the Inhuman royal family. A lot of this issue is about getting Frank over. He was one of the first new humans we got. He's the cop with the eye thing.
It was interesting for an issue.
I still like him.
I know you do, in fact. My opinion.
I like him more than Dante, who they focused on for like the first two issues of the new Inhumans comic, and has now been completely supplanted by Frank.
Ha ha!
Does he have a Inhuman name? Because they still just call him Frank McGee.
They mentioned it in the beginning of the issue. Because he was referring to himself as in his former life or when I was Inhuman. I can't remember what the name was. But yeah, they never call him by the Inhuman name.
Yeah, they still call him Frank. So it's like, okay, whatever. That was neat. No, but they had all the stuff that was going on in the last issue with the guys fighting and whatnot. They brought in Frank to track down the person. That was Phantom X's sister, wasn't it?
Who?
Was that who that was?
Who?
Phantom L?
Does Phantom X even have a sister?
Sort of, yeah.
It could have been, yeah, I guess. Cause, you know, she was hired, so maybe.
Yeah, she was hired by the Capo, who is still alive. The evil guy who ran Intellects.
Yeah, whatever that was.
He was the one who stole the Intellects item. So Frank was there to do that. Black Bolt dealt with the two big monsters who were fighting by beating the shit out of them, and then they asked him what he wanted for stopping it. He pointed at the World Heavyweight Championship and fucking Black Belt, like a boss, still in his suit, walks away with the belt over his shoulder because you don't wear the fucking belt. And,
there was that one girl, remember the, Leader and, was it the Thinker?
Yeah, Leader and the Mad Thinker were, okay, originally they had a bomb, and they had disarming the bomb to each other. It turned out they had multiple bombs, and every time one of them disarmed the bomb, they produced another bomb that the guy had to put out. But Isa, one of the new ones, who kind of got over with me in this issue, she fucked with their brains to restrict the flow of oxygen into a certain
part. But they were unaware of this as they were doing this contest of trivia.
Yeah, she challenged them to trivia, but they kept getting stupider and stupider. And there was a funny scene of like Mad Thinker walking away and he gave a dumb answer to something like monkeys.
It was cats. I forgot the question. I think I saved the panel right here. Let's see if I can pull it up very quickly. Let's see. No, that is something else. I can't find it right now.
There's just a funny scene where he says that and then they're like walking him away after she turns them stupid. And he just looks at her, he's like, I still think the answer is cats, or whatever it is. I pop for that. No, this issue was about getting Black Bolt and the newer Inhumans over. Medusa was there, but she wasn't really a factor, and we had their kid, fucking Deputy Uhura, or whatever her name is.
Have we come to the conclusion what that name is? How it's pronounced?
Uhura?
That's the only thing I can think of. That's the only thing that makes sense.
It's spelled the exact same way.
Yeah.
I thought hers was with an O.
No,
like
I think
hers is Uhura, and he is Uhura.
Let me double check this.
Okay, as you're doing that, we're going to do our final Marvel book, Web Warriors number 5, writer Mike Costa, art by David Baldwin.
Oh, by the way, yeah, you're right. It's with a U. U-H-U-R.
Yeah. Uhura.
But this one is with an A instead of a U.
Yeah, it's Uhura, not Uhura.
Potato, Uhura. Potato.
Well, it's important because they don't think we're talking about Star Trek here.
God forbid.
Well, he was going to have fun with one of his clones, and that was the only other thing that happened. And then we're going to talk about Web Warriors. Web Warriors is a fun book, got Spire Pig in it.
That's your very quick review of it?
Yeah, there was also a Warthog Electro they showed briefly in this. I was hoping they were going to square off, but they didn't. Did they win in this issue? I think they won.
Yeah, they won this issue. They very quickly wrapped up what they were doing with the Electros.
Except Captain Britain and, was it Indian Mayday. Spider-Man?
I thought it was Mayday.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right, because Uncle Ben had to watch Benji or whatever the fucking kid's name is. They beat the Electros, but a couple things happened. Spider-Man UK and Mayday got stuck in this, like, cage they were making for the Electros,
mm-hmm.
and then got teleported somewhere they don't know where because their trackers aren't working. The new master weaver, who is one of the inheritors, he was away from the web, so he got like super weak and hungry. Well, the only thing he could eat is spider totems. So Spider-Man UK offers to like give himself up, and they strongly indicated Spider-Man UK was going to die because he was like weakened. And he, you know, invoked the Charge of the Light Brigade, which means he's going to fucking go down in a blaze of glory when he had like five fucking Electros coming at him. But he's probably not dead.
I would hope not, because isn't he the leader of the group so far?
He's like the de facto leader. They haven't actually listed a leader, but I mean, he's the one who gives out the tactics.
And it's also the one that makes the most sense for him to be the leader, considering that they're dealing with all these dimension stuff, and he's the Captain Britain Spider-Man, so it's appropriate that he would be the leader.
Yeah, but they're still continuing on with what they're doing. So it's not like him being gone has taken away their purpose.
And there's plenty of, yeah, you're right, there's plenty of Spider-Man on the team to where, you know, if they could stand and not have two.
As long as Spider-Man Noir isn't the leader because he's a racist. It'd just be like, let's go after those Chinamen fucking spider people. They're bad. Can't have them around.
I want an issue where that happens and they have to sit down and explain to him why that's incorrect.
Oh god, wait until they find a black Spider-Man.
Oh, wait, can they meet Miles? So offended.
Oh dude, he'll be so offended by that.
Alright, let's move on to our Valiant books. This is listed as A&A, but it's clearly Archer and Armstrong. Number one, writer, Refer Roberts, art by David LaForte.
Archer Armstrong had to go into his magic endless satchel to find a particular bottle of wine.
For a friend, but I get the feeling there's more to the story than he's,
Well, they showed us the friend that, you know, in a flashback, but they didn't show the full scope of it. And Archer had to go rescue him, but Archer, in going to rescue him, had to have somebody watch the bag, because there's like lizard monsters crawling out of the bag and he had to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up beating them up and tying them all up. And then there was also, what was that fucking thing called? It was like a fish.
Yeah, they didn't mention what it was, but they said it was like
a
fish.
No, they
guy.
Said its name.
Oh, okay. Well, I forget. And it wasn't super important too, because they just kept referring to it as the fish guy.
Yeah, it was pretty funny though. The fish guy in a top hat and a thing.
Poor guy. And he's like, I finally escaped. My goodness. I'm so relieved to be out of that bag.
Yeah, he just wanted to go to the ocean.
And Archer's there to give him the business.
Yeah, and Archer's like, no, you get back in the fucking bag. But Archer had to go to his sister, who is head of a league of ninjas?
I assume. It's been a while since I've read this original retelling of the Archer and Armstrong character, so I'm not entirely sure it's been a while since I read that.
She's got a group called the Sisters of Darkness who apparently do bad things, but she's Archer's friend, so he gave her the puppy dog eyes. And got her to agree to watch the bag, and if he didn't come back in a couple hours, then to pull them out. inside the bag, Armstrong is in fact looking for this wine, but then there are like goblins who live there, and what I can only assume is like the Goblin King, or it's not the Goblin King, it's Bacchus, the god of wine and revelry, the ancient Greeks,
who nice.
Armstrong was good with, but has no memory of this guy. Because, you know, Armstrong has been alive for 6,000 years, but he's drunk most of the time.
Yep.
So he doesn't remember this guy, and this guy has been planning his revenge on Armstrong for hundreds of thousands of years.
Poor guy.
And he was very upset when finally his plan comes to fruition, and he doesn't even remember it. But he's going to take him and Archer and torture them. And the sister has decided to fucking steal the bag and go away with it. So, not a lot of hope. Now, in between all this, there were a shit ton of jokes, and a lot of them were funny. But I don't want to list through a bunch of jokes in what was largely a comedy book. Largely.
Yeah, it's a wacky, wacky pairing book.
Yeah, it's different from the other Valiant books because it should be. They can't all be the same. And also, we don't have a Quantum and Woody book right now. And Archer and Armstrong do have a very different dynamic. So that's okay. It leads to different humor. The humor is funny. I will keep reading this. It was fun.
Yeah.
I really like Armstrong.
The art is absolutely gorgeous. It's like very wacky, cartoony looking. It's very.
Yeah, but it fits. And they were in, like, inside that bag is a crazy cartoony world, sort of. So, it's all weird shit. So that made sense.
Yeah, the story I'm not super on board with, but the art's so good I'm willing to give it a few more issues before I give it up.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, okay, and round out this week's books, Imperium 14, writer Joshua Dysart, art by Kerry Evans.
I still like Imperium.
Yeah, it's still good. Livewire in the hardcore battle Harada in space. They're basically doomed, but Livewire came up with an idea. It ended up shocking Harada, but it also kind of crashed them down to Earth.
She made a giant EMP, which the problem with this is apparently that affects Harada. I don't understand why. It would also affect the entire hardcore because they get their powers via, like, satellite transmission and...
Because they got those implants.
Yeah, and robotic implants in their brain. So... More importantly, though, they found out that the aid supplies that we were told about that were coming, they're not actually food and water.
No.
They are things to build...
Space elevator.
Yeah, because Harada wants a space elevator, which from other books we know will lead to New Japan. You know, floating up there, whatever his plan is. It's all stuff for him to build that. So, Harada is willing to sacrifice all these people he's had come live in his new country so that he can build his fucking space elevator and continue on with his plans. This was an issue where they again reminded us, Harada is in fact the villain. He is not a good guy in this. Which is good. But Livewire is a good guy.
Yes.
So she is fighting Harada. They had a really cool action sequence there when they go to the ships. And the ships are, like, they see Gravedog on one of the ships, and they're like, oh, he's waiting for us to get in the sniper range. So they go down, and they realize they're all holograms.
At first they thought they were, like, psychic projections, and they tested for that. But then they're like, oh, wait a minute, these are holograms, not psychic projections.
Yeah, so they have to find out which ship has actual guards on, because that will be the one that has the most important cargo. Because they can't just go and randomly start sinking these ships, because the world thinks they're delivering aid supplies to a country that most of the world is shitting on for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want Harada to win the...
Well, it's not no apparent reason because it's because of a rogue.
Well, because
it's a rogue state, basically.
It is, but it's food supplies, and Harada has positioned his country as being dealt badly with by the world powers. So he's positioning himself as the downtrodden underdog who just wants to do good. And if they go and sink ships full of food and water, that will make the rest of the world look bad and him look even better. So, but, you know, the truth of it is he's not getting them food either way. He's getting fucking materials to build a space platform.
Yes, he's winning the optics war, if you would.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Harada is fine, by the way. After the EMP, he kind of crashed down to Earth, but then, you know, got his mojo going again.
Yep.
So he'll be all right.
Okay. I think that's going to do it for this week's book. So let's move on to our next segment, Book of the Week. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is
awesome when you live in our dream. The great feeling all time I had all my life.
Guys?
Injection was my second choice. I'm actually going to go with Spider-Woman.
I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with that. I'm going to go with Huck. I really liked Huck.
I didn't think much of Huck this month.
That was one of the books where I put it down. I'm like, hey, that had a nice little arc, and I was kind of happy after reading it.
Okay. It didn't annoy me like Mark Miller books tended to.
Yeah, we're still waiting for the rug to be pulled out from under us, but that is yet to happen.
There's only one more issue.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so really? Okay. Well, then he made a smart move.
All right, let's wrap up the show and do next week's books. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes, or how my heart breaks, I will be right here waiting for you. Okay, hopefully we have a lighter week than we had this week.
Klaus number 4 is coming out again.
Klaus?
Klaus.
You idiot.
It's coming
you
out
clawed.
Again. Art Ops number 6.
Ooh.
Hyped.
Jacked number 5.
You're hyped? Jacked even?
Yeah, Jacked is almost over.
Aww.
I'm not reading Justice League 3001 anymore, because even though I like the last couple issues, I want to see where it's going. It's getting canceled, so I don't want to finish it out.
That's fine. I was never a really big fan of that book, and any opportunity to cut books, I'm all for. Keep it coming.
I'm looking. What?
Lois and Clark.
Ooh.
I always miss that book. That book's getting canceled too, but I like it more. So.
Yeah.
Wait, I don't see it.
I see it on mine.
Oh, it's under Superman, that's why.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, Superman, Lois and Clark. Okay, so we're going down further. Nothing there. Image.
Let's see if there's anything from Image that I want to read for myself or recommend.
Ringside.
Yeah.
There's a new mini called Circuit Breaker.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, I was going to say, I can already tell you guys, you're not going to want to read this.
What is it?
I just looked at that. It's
like poison it is.
Not going to be reading that. All new, all different Avengers.
I think maybe I should post a pic of that so people know exactly what we're talking about.
Did you get all new, all different Avengers?
I did, of course.
All new Hawkeye?
Just gonna put Hawkeye.
Are you still reading Carnage?
I never read it.
Here's the thing. I read Carnage. The last issue was wrapping up the first arc. I'll take a peek at it, but I'm not sure if I'm gonna read it.
Okay. Well,
let's just drop. This is not do a review.
Hyperion number 1.
Eh.
Hyperion is a trucker?
Who's writing?
I don't know. I never heard him.
That isn't.
I'm gonna try to read it. It's got. They must think something of it because it's got 5 variant covers.
I think they're just doing it because it's our super. Oh jeez, I'm looking at the cover of Circuit Breaker. It's so bad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm gonna try to read Hyperion because it's new and it's Hyperion and I like it. Illuminati number 5 for us.
Ooh, which Christopher Daniels, I'm surprised was a big fan of.
Well, we like it. He's got good taste. We're not reading Star Wars books anymore, right? Or is there one we're reading?
We agreed that we're just going to read, was it Darth Vader or Star Wars? Or how did that work out?
I read Dave, the main book in Vader. Star Wars and Vader.
Okay. Well, so, Star Wars 17 is coming.
Alright, I'll put Star Wars on the list.
Totally Awesome Hulk. Ultimates number 5.
Ooh.
Uncanny X-Men is a tie-in to something, right?
It's the tie-in to that X-Men crossover, I think.
But is this the first issue of that tie-in crossover, or?
Let me see what it says. Sorry, I'm at my mom's. Sorry,
I really, really, really don't want to read that book.
The final confrontation between the Uncanny X-Men and the Dark Riders. No, we don't need to read
that. That's the ending of the last, of the first arc. No, we don't need to read
that. So it hasn't happened yet, okay. And then we go down to...
It's actually a light week next week.
Yeah, well. Bloodshot Reborn Annual.
Ooh. Wait, it's because it's an annual. Is it written by someone else?
Probably, but the cover, one of the covers is done by Kana. it's written by Lemire.
What's that?
It's written by Lemire.
Okay, I'll say, is the depth perception all off because it's, you know, Kano with his middle eye?
Well, it's a very artistic cover, so you can't tell.
Okay.
Did you guys stop with Dr. Mirage? Because I missed.
It's the last issue, so I'm reading.
Yeah, it's the last issue, okay. In Exo Manowar 45.
Death Defying Dr. Mirage. And Exo Manowar. Let's see how we are on books. This actually looks really thin. I think we may just have either a dozen or under a dozen. Let's see.
Had to happen sometime.
15 books!
Well, is it WrestleMania next week?
No, that's in 2 weeks, dude.
Oh, okay.
WWE number one fan here.
And I don't even know if we're doing a show that week.
Haven't fucking watched a show for like a month.
Yeah, we still don't know what we're going to do because me and Dave are actually going to go down to Dallas, Texas. So we're not entirely sure what we're going to do that weekend.
Record the show in the same room.
That's what I'm thinking. Why not just me and Dave do the show?
Or fucking call me and you guys can be in the same room.
But we'll figure something out. If Dave doesn't want to do the show, I'm not going to twist his arm. All right. I think that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HaveGuard.com, thanks for checking out the show. And as always, see you guys next week.